It is Thursday, the 2nd of April, 2015, and this is episode 241 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. Luckily, we're doing this one on the 2nd of April, so there will be no joke stories in here, we promise. I am Chris, hosting as ever, and joined by Ian.
Even Chris, I'm so tired of like the... Well, it's not just tech brands anymore, it's everybody doing crap April Fools. Let it go.
That's just you getting old, because, you know...
It's not.
It does seem more and more and more, but it's been going on for many years, and it will continue for many years.
I know it has, but it just seems that I'm just jaded.
Yeah, that's like I say, it's just you getting old. let's talk about the news then. So we're going to start with Google, who has lost a UK court appeal over its tracking, specifically it circumnavigating Safari browser's lockdown on cookies. There was a little workaround which Google happened to make use, and unfortunately for Safari users, that meant that they were tracking users who had specifically blocked their cookies. And the judge has said, no, people can sue them for that reason. What do you reckon?
part of me just felt it was like folk trying to make their name slightly, to be honest.
Totally.
But at the same time, Google should be respecting our browsers. As that.
So what I do know, for various reasons, is that nearly every single service provider that I know of use the same workaround to make their applications work, because otherwise they wouldn't work in Safari. It's just so happens that Google used it in a way which then meant it was storing cookies in a of tracking data, where these other services were using it in a way that made sure that Facebook worked, for example. So everyone was doing it, yet Google's the one that's getting sued. So again, why aren't they chasing other people?
And it's the same. It's just, I mean, you could make the same argument for the amount of times that websites are taken down, you know, because they're doing certain things and there's loads of others doing the same. Mm. Or Apple decides a certain app, you know, and I think there was one recently where it was a GIF sharer. And they said you can't store content from like the BBC and a couple other US, you know, TV networks. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, "I'm storing GIFs. You know, I'm not, but because on his screenshots and mm-hmm. when somebody went in to browse other content, there was like people had put up GIFs from TV
those
programs.
TV shows, so it's nothing to do with him, but yeah.
And Apple applied that logic, and I just feel this is much the same. Somebody's going to cop it. They'll make a name for themselves. I do think you're going to see more and more of this. I think we saw something from Facebook this week about the EU saying that Facebook is illegally tracking people when they shouldn't be. And they're talking about doing some legal action. So I think you're going to see more and more.
Yeah, we are. And I guess being held to account more and more is a good thing. And I guess, you know, say the reason that other users maybe or services weren't treated the same is because they're not storing data, user data specifically. But anyway, there you go. Just a bit of background. And the chances are that anyone who sues based on this is not exactly going to be rolling in the cash after it. But if it is a mass lawsuit against Google, it could end up being costing them an awful lot of money. Just depends how many people can be bothered.
you've said it before, the data's out there. I just almost like giving up worrying about it now.
I haven't given up worrying, and I still think it's an important issue. But the problem is, you've got to concentrate. You've got to pick your fights right. Yeah, and I'm not sure that one's the one to pick. Google now, they're starting to include their photos Google Plus photos are now being introduced into Google Drive. So it looks like they are kind of fragmenting the Google Plus service and using it in individual parts. So for example, Android phones by default will store your all your photos that you take as backups inside Google Plus. So now that's going to be available in Drive. And those photos are generally regarded as really quite clever in that Google will auto-enhance. So it does all the kind of basic things you'd do with a software package, you know, correct the balances and exposures and stuff like that. And it does it all for you. And I have to say that whenever I take a picture, the enhanced version always looks better than the bog standard.
I want to say, was it auto awesome? Was that when it was combining like three or four together and it made a little GIF? There's a number of things that they do.
I think that was someone else, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a number of things that they do. And we covered this a few weeks ago that Google Plus was going to start splitting up. So I think Hangouts was going to be spun off to something different. And Photos, and I think it's a good idea.
Yep.
Ultimately, I see they'll have a Photos product, they'll have a Hangouts product, maybe by that name or something else, and I think Google Plus will eventually die.
Well, and it's because those are the elements of the platform that people use. They don't, like I say, that it's, the daily stream is not somewhere that most people go and navigate.
People, especially a lot of tech people, talk about there's so much engagement. I think photographers got a lot of engagement, but it's all around the photos.
That's because they don't, because there's such a tight community of people. Yep, it's, you don't exactly get all that. You don't get the trolling, probably.
Yeah, and so I think there were certain people who were saying, you know, they'll put a post up and they get like, you know, 1,000 replies. Yeah. And there's a lot of people saying, oh, Google Plus, it's just a dead zone. And I think it kind of is in many places.
I'd say technology is the biggest factor of it. It's biggest element to it that I've seen, certainly. And people are active in that, you know, posting up Google Plus stories. So I quite often go back to my stream because I'm looking at my photos or something. I'm just looking to check what's been backed up. And then I see the stream and I think, actually, that's quite compelling still. It hasn't gained traction, that's all.
No. And I kept going for a while. I actually still post up when we do a podcast. I still put in there that I posted one, but it feels like the only person that I don't get any benefit from it, but the only person that knows about that's me.
Yeah. I know. It's also quite, I find it quite hungry as far as processing power and memory. So on something like the iPad, it's not smooth, and therefore, you know, Facebook for its pluses and minuses is generally quite a smooth experience on my iPad compared.
Yeah, okay. I've actually stopped pretty much using Facebook. Anyway. Okay.
Yeah. EU has also stated its intent that it wants to it wants to get rid of regional limits on digital goods, things like streaming and movies and things like that within the European Union, because it says that an open and free market doesn't have these regional barriers. So it's kind of, I guess its intent is to, if you want to watch Netflix from Germany and France, you can, and you can see all the content that's available to them at the same time.
I've always felt burnt since I was a kid. It wasn't movies, it was games. It was when Nintendo were bringing out their games in Japan, and it literally was 6-7 months later in America, and another 5-7 months in UK. And it felt such a long time when you saw Mario and Pilot Wings and all these great games, and you're like, I can't play them. Why am I waiting a year? You know, and you always got that, oh, we need to translate. You're like, bollocks.
Yeah, it's not going to take you a year. Bollocks. If you were really that interested. Then what it actually comes down to is the fact that people can't afford the marketing budgets to make the impact that they want in each of the different regions. I don't think this is only a European-wide thing as well, so it's not even going to help you. As a kid, it's not going to help you, basically.
No, but I think ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I think that the more that content moves to streaming, I think somebody's eventually going to break it. And I don't know how, because you've got, we talked about with HBO, Sky have got, you know, the HBO almost like license in the UK. So even though there's HBO have particular channels in Europe for streaming content, does that then mean that the license agreement that Sky have got in place is then null and void? Because I can just watch an HBO channel in Germany, apart from it being German, you know, but
we've seen bits like this before where, you know, there's arguments, but I guess it's more on a sort of international level where, you know, football rights get sold in, you know, the other side of the world, and they're not, premiership rights there aren't worth as much as they are here. So, but there was an agreement that you could watch a feed from the other side of the world if you want to do, or make a subscription there. So, yeah, I think it does become more and more fractured, so we say, that you know, the boundaries that are artificially imposed become more and more ridiculous, really. But licensing, that's how licensing works currently, because you need jurisdiction in an area, and that's currently controlled by national boundaries. We don't have an international law that controls things like that.
But I would argue that's a law from an old age, and at some point that is going to break.
I think yes and no, but then again, you wouldn't want all the laws that America impose coming over here, would you?
Yeah, I want the guns, bring them.
Well, they're the laws they don't impose, right? The other way around. Jay-Z aiming to take down Spotify and do it for the artists, man. Do it for the artists.
This irritated me. Okay, this really irritates me.
So he bought a service, did he? Did he?
I know. So he bought a service for, and I want to say it was something like 30 or 40 million.
$50 million, so yeah, about £30 million.
Yeah, and he bought this not so long after Apple had bought Beats, and he bought this service, and the main thing that Tidal had been known from up until that point was they were trying to do high fidelity music, you know. So they were saying
you didn't mention it was Tidal that he bought, which was an existing service, yeah.
Yeah, but you can. The whole thing about Tidal was always about, you know, yeah, you can pay your $5 or $10 for Spotify or RDO or whatever else, but we're going to offer fantastic audio quality, and it was all about that was its unique selling point, and then so Jay-Z bought it, and then earlier this week, him and was it 15 other artists, you know, so Kanye West, Rihanna,
all his mates,
Madonna, Alicia Keys, Beyonce, yep. Little Chris Martin was in there as well, saying, "Me, please." And so they were all up on stage, basically signing up to this service.
Right.
And they're also saying they're owning it. And it was all about for the art. You had Madonna spouting off and Kanye West spouting off about it. It was all about the art. And it's like, load of bollocks. It's all about money. None of you guys are interested in the art. Don't give us it. It's all about you're hacked off that all these other companies are making it, and why can't you make it? Because I started seeing it was almost like a backlash against tech. They kept on saying, oh, everybody talks about Spotify and all these tech companies buying music. It's the artists, we should own it, and it's up to us. And it's like, no, you're in this for the money. Where was all the smaller artists? Where was the, here's the 100 artists that are not got a platform, and we're going to do something different for them? Rubbish.
The irony is that there is a strong argument to say that the Spotify model does not help small artists.
Absolutely.
But the irony is that the artists that are signing up here on stage and trying to get all this attention are the very people that do make money. Maybe not as much as the teeny bopper bands or whatever, but they still make money out of Spotify, whereas there are millions and millions of bands out there that make nothing, basically, based on the Spotify model. So there is space for a new model.
There is space, but I just found it bollocks, basically, what they were all saying.
Yeah, of course it is, because the whole reason they're doing it is to get more money, exactly. And you know, they're saying the reason it's unfair for artists is that they don't get a fair share of the money, and they're so they can't. It's a juxtaposition, isn't it? They're saying we're not doing this for money, but we are doing it for the money. So yeah, it's a bit weird. But they, you know, like I say, there's space for a competition. The only thing is when you get this kind of war type going on, Spotify is going to lose out, and you're going to have to start making choices as to which, you know, where do you put your money.
And I do agree that the Spotify model, I still think back to, remember there was the pie charts that says, you know, if somebody buys a CD, you know, it's like £2 or £3 goes to the artist.
Yeah.
And it was like you had to, what was it, something like, you know, 100,000 streams to get,
yeah,
to get so a
even
pound or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous. And
you know, it just felt.
And the problem is that, so, you know, the model is subscriber pays money. They might listen to a particular band entirely, you know, using their $9.99 for that month. They only listen to, you know, Acme Band. But Acme Band don't get any money of that subscription, even though that's the entire reason that person spent their $9.99, because they only generate the 10 views that he did. Yet those 10 views are the whole reason for that $9.99. So that's the kind of different model because the money all goes into a central pot and then gets divvied out by the number of streams in from total. So, you know, basically the massive labels gain all the money that person gave in, even though that person didn't give any, you know, didn't listen to their songs once.
And I've got no issue with the whole it's lossless, so we're going to charge you double. And it's like, fine, if somebody can...
20
somebody,
quid's too much.
It feels too much nowadays, because it feels... But we talked about it with HBO charging $15 against, you know, Netflix, which is down at, you know, $9, $10, you know, for a lot more content. But HBO's, I think, got a lot of a smaller amount of content, but high quality. And it's
that is slightly different from charging $19.99 for high quality versions of shit that you don't want to listen to.
I know. But I don't know. I mean, it's like part of me feels I think they're just in it for the short term, looking for a tech company to buy them. And I still look at what they stood up on stage and just thought, you're just looking for a group to come
very,
and buy
very,
this.
Very possibly, but also because they're shoving a few million pounds at trying to get Spotify to change the model as well, probably. Because Spotify does have the market share at the moment. That's not to say it won't change. They'd have to get a lot more people on board before that's going to happen.
Mm.
Microsoft has officially got rid of its Windows RT brand, and it's released its low-end Surface 3 tablet, so a kind of replacement for the old RT version of it. But it is going to be running full Windows 8.1, and it will move to Windows 10 when that comes out soon.
I actually thought this looked really good.
Yeah, it's still expensive, though, especially when you add the keyboard and the, you know, if you want a stylus on top. So it's quite expensive.
But it felt iPad price to me.
Maybe you don't get
a keyboard with an iPad.
No, but I think most people would want to put a keyboard on it.
So it's the same for both then.
Yeah, fair dues. Yeah, okay, granted. It's powerful enough. It sounds like it's got enough battery life, which is the most important. So, and a fair bit of memory and ports. Always the ports. So you got a display port and a USB port.
Yeah. So it's probably got more ports than the upcoming MacBook.
Definitely will. Definitely. Slightly lower resolution than the kind of latest Retinas, but it's still full HD. They've gone a slightly different ratio, still keeping with their 3:2 ratio, which I kind of agree with for a tablet. I think I've said this before. I initially thought it was mental not to go widescreen, but I totally get it now.
No, I do as well. I've used a Surface Pro 3 for probably 2-3 months, mm-hmm. As a work device, and it was good. It had a number of kind of usability issues, and Windows 8 was a bit frustrating, but the hardware itself was fine. The actual the hinge, fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, repeated use and it still kept firm. You know, it was really, really nice to use.
That's good. And say, so did you find you were using it in its propped up states? And
yeah, absolutely. It did feel, and I think it was more Windows, the soft keyboard wasn't great. I was always having to use the actual physical keyboard.
And what was the physical keyboard like? Was it robust enough?
Yeah. And this was the one, I can't remember, because there was two different types, but this was the one with a little magnet on it, so it actually gave you an angle. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought that's going to collapse. It didn't.
Okay.
It's actually, you know, so fair play to them. It was actually really well designed. And it was bizarre. I could put it in my work bag alongside the laptop. The bag didn't feel that much heavier. So it always...
Because it was bemoaned for being quite a heavy device, wasn't it? So.
And the battery life was spot on. It was a general work day. was fine.
So by the time they put Windows 10 on it, we might actually be able to recommend it as a pretty good device.
I do think it is a really good iPad competitor. The only thing I still think is lacking is the Windows Store. I was shocked how bad it was. Mm. Shocked.
But that's because they don't have the footfall.
Yeah, but they keep on talking about, oh, we've got 300,000 apps or whatever. But a lot of the apps are links to websites.
Right, okay.
So you would go on there and web apps, there's some sort of mind manager tool, but it was like, here's a link to the developer website, right, and you would have to go and download it from there.
Right.
It's like, so it's not in your store, but they count it as that. I just thought that is...
Because they're having to.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Google announced the Chrome Bit computer. So basically, it's a Chromebook, but remove the screen, remove the keyboard, and compress everything down into a little stick, which is, they're saying kind of a couple of inches longer than a memory stick kind of length, a bit wider, a bit more kind of robust. But it looks pretty special. And as long as you've got a keyboard at the location you're at and a screen that you can plug into, you're away, because it comes with a display port built in. I think I'm right. So you can just plug and go. Cheap, looks like it's going to be $100. I find the device interesting. I don't know where the market is.
And I was much the same. It was one of these, like, I'd love that to just be in my bag, and if I just went somewhere, I could plug it into a TV and just crack on.
But how many places are you going to... You're going to have to take your USB keyboard or your Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, I know.
So the reality of it isn't going to be quite the same as it. But I can imagine in a school, I think they have said school might be a great environment for this, you can actually take away all the PCs and lock them in a safe, you know, without any issues. And that storability and just having that flexibility, events and things like that, just being able to lock away devices that easily is pretty
compelling. For me, it was another kind of, it just shows you where we're getting with almost like miniaturization. I mean, yes, we've had Raspberry Pi and we've had things like the Fire TV and all the, you know, the Chrome TV and all that kind of stuff that you can, you know, stick in your telly.
Yep.
But this was like just that little step further. Yeah. And the price they talked about was below $100. And I don't know if that means like $99 or whether it was
still,
like,
it's still going to be about £70, which is still pretty amazing. I think I mentioned a while back that I saw the time when devices were going to be display and input agnostic. You'd hold around your computer in your pocket and you'd then plug in, because places would have displays for you to plug into, whatever. And I think this is that direction. The problem is we don't have the places that have the TVs and stuff. I guess hotel rooms nowadays more and more allowing you to plug into their TV. So it is just the keyboard aspect that's a bit lacking at the moment. But it's not, you know, they're the projector keyboards that people have been talking about and all those kind of things. Who knows where we're going to go? The roll-up keyboard. Maybe it won't be such an onerous thing to tuck one in your bag.
Mm.
There you go. Amazon. They've. Are you sure this wasn't an April Fool's joke?
It did take me a while. Okay, I won't lie. So I think the New York Times also took a while. They took like a kind of like 12 hours before they actually published it.
Because it was frighteningly close to April Fool's Day. This was the 30th of March that this got announced.
Well, it was the 31st. And it was actually announced by the time it was 1st of April in Australia. So some people were thinking, this is April Fool's.
And it kind of, and when you first hear it, and we'll talk about it in a second, it does sound very much along those lines. But then you kind of go down a bit further into it and you think, actually, no, this is a clever idea, if a little bit cynical and a little bit consumerist. So they have designed these little, effectively magnety type buttons, which are all branded, say, for a common everyday item. So maybe a dishwasher branded button, there'd be a toilet roll branded button. And the idea is you ping these buttons in places where when you're running low on something, you can just click the button and that automatically fires an order off to Amazon, and it will arrive, you know, 2 days later. So this is a prime members benefit at the moment, but I'm sure will be rolled wider. So you just, you put it by your bread bin. In fact, bread's probably not a good example, but I think their washing up liquid was quite a clever one. So as soon as you look like it's running low.
It was all I think it was 18 different consumer brands. And as you say, tiny little buttons called Dash. And it was a Dash product about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, which was a remote control, which you scan barcodes and you said, order me this, order me this, order me this. So you could do your shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I looked at it and I thought, April Fool's. And I thought, actually, this is brilliant. This is almost like that whole Internet of Things and just making it like you don't need to think anymore. And they were saying things like, you know, well, what happens if, you know, what if you've forgotten if you've pressed it or not? And if you press it again, it's fine. And until you get your next one delivered, it won't try and send another one.
Right. So you can't press it 10 times and accidentally. So a little kid can ding, 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 ding. I just also thought
coupled, you know, if they did like Andrex, you're in the toilet and you're in Manhattan and they've got 1 hour delivery, you will never again be stuck on the toilet without a toilet roll.
But yeah, and you know what? Other than the fact that this has obviously just been rolled out on big major brands at the moment, when they release this and it is a configurable item rather than a branded and specific, I think you've nailed it then. And I'm sure that will happen. I'm sure will come the day where you log into your Amazon account and say, what does my button do?
Yeah. And I can see it for things like, you know, like, I don't know, but it's something that you use constantly and you run out of, you know, like nappies, you know, if you're getting loads of nappies and you're just, and you're like, oh, I'm doing my last one. Bump, you know, the next ones are coming tomorrow.
I always have that problem.
Yep.
Like I say, when I first saw it, I saw a consumerist, horrible, you know, buying focused thing, but actually, it could become useful, especially if it becomes more configurable, which I'm sure.
And Amazon are doing all these things about how do we make it easy for you to buy stuff?
Yeah, so, like, their checkout process is the most simple thing ever. You know, it takes 2 seconds to order something once you're all set up, and you know, there's no typing in verification codes. I guess they just take the hit if there's chargebacks and things like that because they're
got the whole thing sorted now with, like, so yes, you can bin Prime. I am a bit hacked off that they use Amazon Logistics for most of my deliveries now instead of DPD. I think there's been some instance up here and they've chucked DPD,
right?
And logistics isn't as good because they just say it's coming today, whereas DPD was at
home. Used to give you the time exactly.
I'm Bob just round the corner.
Bob will be delivering your package at. Yeah.
And whether they'll get to that, because it's all Amazon Logistics, but Amazon Logistics tends to be like a white van turns up and a guy comes out, especially in Glasgow, and says, "Are you Ian?" "Yeah, I'm." "This is for you."
It's very rare you get a branded delivery van nowadays.
It's just like, you know, it's like, all right, here's this.
No need to sign. You take. Bye bye. Okay.
Whereas compare that to DPD, who got very friendly with us, you know, and all that, because the same guy all the time. And UPS, another firm favourite of mine, who for a time was delivering so much to me, he spotted my mum a few streets down the road and gave her a lift up to the house.
That's because you're a consumerist, modern day freak. Google.
Get in, I'm heading to your house. I'll give you a lift. Oh, don't be daft. No, I'm heading there right now.
Wow, that's very trusting. Google Maps.
On whose behalf?
Yeah, exactly, both. Google Maps did one of their little Easter eggs over the April Fool's period. You could be Pac-Man on their Google Maps. I think it was in specific locations, wasn't it?
Oh, well, I just went to Glasgow.
Okay, because I just searched for Times Square and that was all sorted. I didn't realise it was wider than that. But yes, you could go and play Pac-Man in the streets of cities around the world.
So if I just go to Maps and it's at my home address just now and I've got a little Pac-Man symbol and I just click on it and my street turns into Pac-Man.
So I had a fun game of Pac-Man in Times Square, which was great. And it worked just like Pac-Man, just like you'd expect it to.
See, as a little Easter egg, it was brilliant. Yeah, I just thought that's great.
I mean, just, and all the sounds are right, all the music was right, lives, all the graphics perfect. Very, very clever. Well done, Google.
Yes.
That's the end of our podcast, unless you got a pick for us.
No.
Did you play Ori in the Blind Forest?
No. I instead played Neverwinter because all our friends were talking about it.
Neverwinter.
Yeah. Is it Neverwinter?
I don't know. I think you might have mentioned it before. I don't think I
did. No, I didn't. It was all the guys were talking about it on WhatsApp a couple of days ago.
Okay.
You probably just ignored me like you usually do.
It's safer that way.
Oh, I sounded so needy when I said that. so needy. But yeah, it's a free RPG. And it's like, you know, they're doing all kind of free to play, you know. So it's like, so if you want extras, you can buy Zen coins or something that kind of nonsense. But it's quite slow and sluggish, and it felt really tiring.
It's just frustrating. Okay.
So it was like 8 gig that I'll delete tonight.
I love the fact that you can now do that nowadays. Just 8 gig of that, whatever, I'll just get rid of it. Yeah. Whereas before it was like, that was 6 months hard effort downloading that.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. So that is the end of the podcast. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a good Easter. If you want to find out more about us, you can do digitaloutbox.com. info@digitaloutbox.com is the email address, and Twitter is digitaloutbox if you'd like to get hold of there. I'm also on Twitter as CheesyUK if you want to speak to me. Also academyracer.co.uk. only 2 weeks till I start racing, so keep an eye there because all the updates coming. I've got my timetable, my first timetable. I will be posting with interest soon.
Can't wait.
Where can we find you, Ian?
My blog is iand.net. I'm on Twitter as Shreeper. And Chris, have a great Easter.
You have a great Easter too, even though I'll be ignoring you. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dum-dum-dum-dum. Boom.